When schools and restaurants shut down at the start of the pandemic, a lot of farmers had no one to buy their products. Some had to dump their milk, others had to toss or donate produce. Some states, though, like Florida and Maine, had a strategy aimed at helping, a website that would let farmers sell their products online to more local customers, an effort that one state official called an online farmers market. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you buy products directly from farmers at a farm stand, farmer's market, or CSA? If you're a farmer, did the pandemic interfere with your regular sales? Do you sell direct to consumers one way or another? What do you think of this idea of an online farmer's market, a matchmaking service between farmers and local customers? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Ximena Bustillo is a food and agriculture policy reporter at Politico. She's also the author of the Morning Agriculture newsletter. Ximena, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Well, can you take us back to those disruptions at the beginning of the pandemic for those farmers used to selling lots of stuff to big customers like schools and restaurants?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you noted, you know, schools and entertainment venues all closed, you know, almost at around the same time in a couple weeks time frame in March and early April. And the key thing to kind of note is that the packaging for what is called fresh produce, so what you find in a school lunch cafeteria or at a restaurant, is different than packaging that you find at the grocery store, where you can get an individual package of flour or individually wrapped beef even. For schools, for restaurants, it's all bulk packaging. And that was one of the first issues that producers and farmers saw, was trying to figure out how to pivot. We heard that word a lot, how to pivot their supply chain from bulk to individual or from individual to bulk, one way or another. And, you know, people and companies just weren't buying that bulk at the same rate, which means that you had producers with all this food ready to pick, ready to process, with literally nowhere to go. And then you had issues at meatpacking plants, where workers, many who are undocumented or lacked access to PPE or time off, were getting sick at record rates, and that slowed the meat processing plants. So at the end of the day, there was never a complete shortage of food in existence within the country, but there were backlogs and bottlenecks in the supply chain. And that's why you hear the term supply chain disruptions or bottlenecks or issues kind of coming from there.
Now, we're familiar with this happening with milk, certainly here in Wisconsin. You keyed in on tomatoes in Florida for one of your examples and talked to some tomato farmers there whose, you know, usual MO would be, we're growing lots of tomatoes and we're selling them all over the country. What did you hear from them about those early days?
Yeah, absolutely. I talked to one particular producer to start. His name's Tony DeMari, and he is a large producer in Florida. He also actually has two operations in California. So really, really large like production and farms for tomatoes, like millions of pounds. And when the pandemic hit Florida, the interesting thing there is it was their peak harvest season. And much of the food either goes to those same fresh avenues, especially entertainment venues like theme parks, or it's exported out to other states. So even if Florida didn't shut down or see as big of closures as other states did, it did affect whether or not food could even leave that state to begin with. So producers like Tony were like, we do not have anywhere to go. And even if they did donate to food banks didn't have often the personnel levels or even the capacity to take as much food as they normally, as was being kind of funneled towards them. And when it comes to dairy production, dairy products, even like cheese, right? Like think of a bulk, you know, thing of cheese that's very, very large. A food bank isn't going to be able to just take that.
Talking to Ximena Bustillo from Politico. She's an agriculture reporter there, looking at the disruptions from the early days of the pandemic and the ways that farmers and some states tried to help people used to selling to big customers, as we've been talking about, to sell to local consumers instead. You can join at 800-642-1234. Is this a familiar story to you, maybe, as a farmer? That's 800-642-1234. As a customer, do you look for ways to buy as direct as possible from farmers? Is it easier said than done sometimes in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Okay, Ximena, there's this big problem out there. You found a couple of states that tried to help connect the dots here. Could you tell us what they tried to do?
Yeah, so I zeroed in on Florida and Maine, as you mentioned earlier. Florida, from the get-go, created a brand new website called Florida Farms to You. And it was kind of this matchmaking service where producers could upload a profile with what they sell, when it'll expire, where they're located. And then people or companies could go on there and just literally see where they could go and show up and order, you know, direct to consumer there. In Maine, Maine already had something like this, which is pretty interesting. Like, they already knew that supply chain disruptions could potentially be a problem, largely because, unlike Florida, which is at the start of the supply chain line, Maine tends to be the end. But also similarly, like, a lot of the food that they produce within the state leaves the state. It doesn't stay inside the state. So they wanted to find a way already that if there were supply chain disruptions, how could they, you know, preempt that and have that consumer base inside? The thing that they did differently is they had additional grants, you know, for producers to spend money on credit card fees if they needed those, or website domains if they needed to make those, or purchase new equipment to do that pivot that we were talking about earlier and buy new equipment to be able to package things differently or process food differently for an individual consumer base. And that did allow some producers to really increase their consumer base by extreme amounts and really, really profit instead from the pandemic. Obviously, we didn't see that everywhere across the country. Not all producers had access to these resources. Not everyone necessarily knew about them. And not everyone can always afford to order their food directly through a farmer or a producer. And so there are some caveats there. But the fact that it worked in some areas is indicative that if this was maybe expanded more or more resources were poured into that, it could really work.
Right. In Florida, you mentioned they had the online matchmaking service to help farmers sell directly to consumers. But without some of those things you mentioned in Maine, if I understand this right, like going from selling lots of stuff to big customers to small amounts of stuff to a whole bunch of different customers, there's a lot of logistical hurdles there. And the things like you mentioned in Maine, the credit card processing, the packaging, things like that. Did that make a difference in Florida?
That's a really good question. I think it really just depends. And even in Maine, it really just depended on if you had access to the information, if you knew that the state were running these programs to begin with. I did talk to some producers that said that they didn't know that this was even an option for them. But I also talked to some that said that they did know that it was an option, and they were able to work with the state and work with the website to find, you know, even as much as volunteer truck drivers that just they had a truck that could refrigerate food and transport their goods. So, you know, it's a very like interesting collaborative and community effort almost to a sense.
Talking to Ximena Bustillo, she covers food and agriculture policy at Politico. She's the author of the Morning Agriculture newsletter there. With us today to talk about her recent reporting on a couple of state-run websites that let farmers sell their products online, partly a response to supply chain disruptions early in the pandemic. As we'll find out coming up, some of those farmers like having a wider customer base. You can join in at 800-642-1234. As someone who eats food, I imagine you do. Do you look for ways to get stuff directly as possible from your local farmers, whether that's going up to the farm stand, the farmer's market, maybe a CSA? What do you like about that if you do it? Do you wish you had more opportunities to do it? If you are on the farming side of things, is this something you've been working on for a long time, having a wider customer base by selling direct to consumers? What challenges, if so, have you run into? And were you one of the many farmers, especially dairy farmers in Wisconsin, who ran into trouble when a lot of big customers were shut down for a while? How did it all work out for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can share your story or question. Email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk now about some of the latest agriculture news, including reporting from our guest about ways that farmers around the country have tried to reach out and sell more directly to consumers. Coming in part out of the disruption from the early days of the pandemic, some states set up online matchmaking, a farmers market type arrangements to help them do that. Still time for your calls, your experiences buying directly from farmers. If you're a farmer trying to sell directly to consumers, what works, what doesn't? Is it something you're looking to do more of in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jimena, a lot of farmers did this. They tried to get into selling direct to consumers. Is this just something, an emergency thing that they did for a while? Or did you find some of them who say, yeah, we're going to try to keep doing this?
I think a lot of them really liked it, you know, just having that revenue option and building that loyal consumer base was something that a lot of them really enjoyed. And this, you have to keep in mind that this also comes along with an increasing trend of people in the United States in general wanting to buy more local, wanting to know where their food comes from. This has been happening incrementally for about 9 years. In 2018, a Gallup poll found that nearly 75% of Americans said that they were trying to include more locally grown foods in their diets, including vegetables, fruits, chicken. So this is something the American consumer is really kind of wanting to see. And when we've seen this trend kind of happening over time. So I just think that it's a whole new consumer base that the pandemic almost like supercharged and like sped up the timeline for.
I just wonder about scale here. If I'm going from selling to Disney World or the Milwaukee School District Food Service or something to Bob over there and Jane over there, like, does the scale really match up? Does it make up for that? Did it make up for that lost business, especially early on?
That is a really good question, and probably not. You know, if you sell to a cruise line and then you need to sell to individual consumers, you are losing those bulk sales. Not to mention Disney has way more money than I ever do as an individual wanting to buy tomatoes from my local grower. But again, you know, there are small growers that were equally impacted, or medium-sized growers that were equally impacted by the pandemic and didn't have, you know, a Disney contract to fall on or an agency contract to fall on.
For the states that did this kind of thing, and again, you focused on Florida and Maine, is this something, are these electronic, these online farmers markets plan to stick around, or is this just like an emergency thing, we're done with it when we can be done with it?
Definitely plan to stick around. Like I mentioned, Maine already had theirs even before the pandemic. So it paid off for them, preempting the supply chain disruption problems and seeing that work in an emergency. And in Florida, you know, the agriculture department there told me that they definitely plan on keeping the program around, and it's still functioning. You know, they did a revamp of it and changed kind of like how it looks and what you can show on it and do on it, and they hope to market it a bit more.
We're talking to Jimena Bustillo from Politico, agriculture and food policy reporter there. Jimena, I want to turn now to another story you're following. You mentioned the meatpacking industry earlier related to the pandemic. Well, there's a lot of big news going on right now surrounding the issue of concentration in the meatpacking industry. Fairly few companies processing meat. What do things look like now?
Yeah, for sure. This is definitely a really, really big topic right now. We hear about concentration and antitrust a lot for technology, but it is a prime issue for agriculture. For example, I guess in beef, four companies control about 80% of all meat, and they're actually dubbed the Big Four. So that's JBS, Tyson, National, and Cargill, probably household names that you've seen at the grocery store before. Because of the pandemic, you know, causing, again, that bottleneck clog and other recent events, like even JBS being hacked by Russian cyber criminals, that has really raised a lot of questions on Capitol Hill and at the White House about, you know, how safe is our food supply? How fragile is it? You know, is it good to have such few companies involved in our food system so heavily?
Is there a thought that even absent a pandemic or cybercrime or whatever, that having that kind of concentration is hurting? Well, let's start with consumers. Is there a thought that this might be making things, more expensive for us?
Yes, there is definitely a lot of conversation around pricing and price fixing. The Biden administration recently put out its own memo that kind of indicated that the price for meat in stores is increasing, but the revenue for ranchers isn't. So, and we heard that a lot today. I am actually calling you from the Hill, where going on hour four of the House Agriculture Committee is talking about the state of livestock in the United States. And that is something that has been brought up a lot by the lawmakers, as well as the witnesses, is, you know, are ranchers being paid for, you know, the meat they're producing at a way that is equivalent to what you or me are going to pay in the store?
Are you hearing members of Congress, apart from raising these questions, are we starting to hear policy ideas from them, breaking up big meat companies or what?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that has been talked about. A lot of it is up to the Department of Justice and the investigations that they undergo, but also with the Agriculture Department and ongoing programs that they are rolling out to kind of address that. And so you'll see that USDA over the last couple of months has begun announcing more programs to, for example, help fund small meatpacking facilities in some states, or implementing grants and loans and assistance to help new meat and poultry processors even enter the market to begin with. And, you know, earlier this week, USDA announced a new loan guarantee program to help what Tom Vilsack, the Ag Secretary, called the middle of supply chain. So if processors, like small or medium processors, wanted to invest more in cold storage or expand mobile processing or even marketing, they could do that. And a lot of this funding also comes from the COVID relief package that was passed in March by Congress. So you do see that legislation turning into a lot of these programs that the Agriculture Department is then able to roll out. But again, that was kind of COVID inspired.
I think all those things you just listed point toward incentives for smaller or medium-sized meat processors. Is there any stick, any things to punish the big groups or to limit their scope?
I haven't heard of anything that pointed yet. You know, the Biden administration says that they are, you know, looking into this, that they will, you know, do investigations as needed. I mean, even last fall, under a different administration, you saw the Justice Department going after JBS a little bit, or lawmakers wanted the Justice Department to go after JBS for consolidation attempts in Colorado. But, you know, it becomes a legal battle at that point.
Now, obviously, this is a big issue for ranchers, and I imagine representatives from places that raise a lot of meat. Is this seen as a big issue for consumers? We might notice the price go up some at the store. I have seen some reports that bacon supply may be limited, but is this something that, I don't know, politicians think their voters are going to get worked up over?
That's a really good question. I think it really depends on the region. You know, a bigger cattle state like Nebraska, for example, or a bigger processing state like Colorado, that might be more top of mind for people than in states where you don't have that proximity, for sure. I think, you know, going to the grocery store during the pandemic and seeing that you didn't have chicken on the shelves or that you didn't have beef on the shelves was shell shocking for a lot of folks. There was panic, right? Like, people were buying these items in bulk because they thought that there was a huge shortage. And again, it goes back to something that we said in the last segment, was the amount of cattle never went away, or the amount of beef never went away, but it was just the processing bottlenecks that were created when one processing plant was shut down because workers were sick, and now there's nowhere to process that beef or that chicken. So that did raise an alarm for a lot of folks. And I think it did create a bigger attention in areas where it might not necessarily be top of mind.
And Jimena, I know in the short term, you're going to go back and keep following this hearing. In the slightly less short term, what are you watching for next on this, just in our last half a minute?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this issue is ever evolving. The Biden administration has created its own competition council to address consolidation and competition in all sorts of sectors, but also agriculture. So kind of seeing how they utilize that council to advocate for different policy changes will be interesting, as well as, you know, what else does USDA do or what else does the Justice Department kind of do as this conversation becomes top of mind and is honestly pretty bipartisan.
Jimena, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you again for having me.
That's Jimena Bustillo, food and agriculture policy reporter at Politico, with us today to talk about the Biden administration plans to turn around concentration in the meatpacking industry and why many farmers turned to online sales during the pandemic.